The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum, and so many things have dominated the week. We're joined by Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Bay South, the party spokesperson for Justice, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal, party spokesperson on workers' rights, enterprise, trade and employment. And we're joined finally by Hugh O'Connell, deputy political editor with Independent Newspapers. Good morning and welcome to you both. One of the biggest stories of the week was about the attack on the Gardaí. Now, obviously, charges have been brought, so we can't talk specifically about that. But, you know, is it, Louise, a sign of the times?
I don't think so. I think it's a sign maybe that we need, the Gardaí need better resources. I think they need more modern equipment. I think we need to look.
Do you think if they had body cams that would not have happened? Even though they did apprehend suspects.
Yeah.
But
the Gardaí themselves say that they want body cams. What I can't understand is why it's taken so long. So my understanding is there's no resistance on the part of Gardaí management to the introduction. There's no legal impediment to it. And yet it does seem to take an inordinately long amount of time. And I think that, you know, when you talk to Gardaí, they're somewhat frustrated at the idea that everybody is saying, well, you can have them, you can have the body cams, but they just don't seem to be
coming. Jim might be able to throw light on that then.
Yeah, well, listen, first of all, can I say the attack on the Gardaí was shocking. But unfortunately, Pat, I wasn't surprised by it because the number of attacks on members of an Garda Síochána has increased. Before we deal with body cams, let's put responsibility where it rests, which is on the people who are responsible for perpetrating that crime. Whether the Gardaí had body cams or not, I don't think that was going to make a difference to that particular offence.
It's a cultural change, maybe, because when I was growing up, you didn't mess with a member of the force. You just did not.
Unfortunately, there's a group of people in society who think they're immune to apprehension, that they've no respect for the public, they've no respect for the Gardaí, they've no respect for the courts. And the only thing they're going to respond to is a very negative response from the organs of state that we have. And the Gardaí have to be a lot less tolerant of that type of behaviour. Courts have to be a lot less tolerant of it. And yeah, I would love to see body cameras on Gardaí, not just for the protection of Gardaí, but also just for the improvement of
policing. But do you know what's the delay?
I don't. I've been told that it's not happening until 2024. I'm not happy with that. I mentioned in the Dáil the other evening when I was speaking on the issue of policing in Dublin, and I didn't get a satisfactory response.
But is it budget?
I don't believe it's budget. I don't believe it's budget.
I think that's the problem.
And I don't think legislation is required.
I don't think there is. There's no legal impediment to it. There just doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency on it. But can I just say that immediately following that attack, and I say this, I'm from Ballyfermot. I have a cousin that lives a moment's walk from where that attack took place with his wife and his two lovely kids. I know that area very, very well. And immediately following that, the community came out in huge numbers to support the Gardaí and to say very, very clearly they want their streets to be safe. They respect the work that the guards do. And I think, you know, we need to have a zero tolerance approach to this, because certainly the people in Ballyfermot and other communities are sick of a small minority absolutely wrecking things for them. They want the Gardaí to be respected. Yeah. They want more Gardaí and better resource Gardaí as well.
Hugh, you would have reported in your newspaper over the years of attacks on firemen at certain occasions of the year. Mm. We report on prison officers being attacked, nurses being attacked in A&E. I mean, again, I ask you the question, sign of our times?
Well, I mean, certainly I notice even politically that there's a greater focus on these issues now. I mean, if I even look at Leo Varadkar's Ord Eish speech last Saturday, one of the key elements of it was getting tough on crime and getting criminals banged up for longer, I think is the words he used on this station. Really, and you know, the other phrase he used is that old Tony Blair idiom that you know, tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. And I think that we're going to see a lot more of that now in the political discourse over the next couple of years, particularly with these kind of incidents happening. These kind of incidents that we don't. Like you said, you know, when you were growing up, you didn't go near a guard. Whereas
now, my perception was that they were a lot bigger than they are now.
Yeah.
But I was only a young fella.
Yeah.
But I did have the impression that they were people you didn't mess with.
People you didn't mess with. Whereas clearly, some people think that they can be messed with now, and that's worrying. And I think that's going to require a greater response both from Gardaí and a greater response from politicians. And I think, as I said, this is going to become a bigger issue within the political discourse over the next couple of years. And I think, you know, it's going to be interesting with the reshuffle, and that, you know, I know that some colleagues of Jim's and maybe Jim himself have been slightly unhappy with Helen McEntee's performance, and you know, there's a suggestion that Fianna Fáil might want to get the justice portfolio, but We'll have to wait and see.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that.
That's
a matter for the Taoiseach and Taoiseach and others. But in terms of an attack upon the Gardaí, I think we have to re-emphasise that an attack upon a guard, in the same way as an attack upon a nurse, constitutes an attack upon society. It's not just an ordinary assault on an individual. That these people are there to defend us and protect us. And maybe it's time, as a political system, we need to start looking at presumptive minimum sentencing for certain types of assaults. I know that there's a present that an assault on an emergency worker can give rise to a sentence of up to 7 years, but maybe we need to look at changing it so that we introduce presumptive minimum sentences, and that's something that the Oireachtas hasn't done to date.
You're a legal man yourself, so the question is, how in touch are judges anyway? I mean, it's one thing to sit in court and you'll have learned people on both sides arguing the toss for and against an accused person, but it's all almost academic. You wonder, do judges actually ever get out on the streets and sample what it's like to walk down a particular road, maybe even the main thoroughfare, GPO, O'Connell Street, late at night? How safe do you feel, Your Honour? The answer is
well, I hope that they do. But I think as well, you know, I mean, when we talk about assaults on frontline workers and I talk about nursing just specifically because it's an area I have some small experience in, you know, when staffing levels drop and when your accident and emergency department is understaffed, violence rises, attacks on the staff rises. So it's not simply a case, and absolutely we need more Gardaí, better resources, and we need to listen to them when they say what they need to do their work. But we also need to look at really simple things like putting 24-hour security into A&E. Now, you might say on the one hand, isn't it desperate that that has to happen? But if it does and if it's necessary for the safety of the nurses and the other staff working in A&E, well, then we should have it.
Yeah, there's also, Hugh, deterrence, because the presence of, like, people have remarked that, you know, when you come across the guys on the Lewis who are employed by the Lewis themselves, they have a kind of a, it's not quite paramilitary demeanour, but they're dressed
in
a way.
Big fellas.
Yeah, some of them are big and some of them are, but it's kind of the same thing you see on the streets of Paris.
Yeah.
Like you just don't mess, you don't even throw, the butt of a cigarette if you're a smoker on the street because these lads are looking on.
I think the presence is a deterrent for sure. And obviously the Lewis employs their own private security. But I mean, I think the guards are, like, certainly anytime I've heard Drew Harris, he's always spoken about getting more guards out there on the streets and acting as a deterrent. And obviously, you know, we have the situation on O'Connell Street where we have this Garda station that's not quite a Garda station, which apparently will be a Garda station now on O'Connell Street. And you would hope that, you know, that would lead to more visibility of guards along the main thoroughfare of the city.
We do have a recruitment crisis, though, on the Gardaí. Yeah. Like, in fairness to the government, they provided for 1,000 new Gardaí next
but
year.
It seems there's a shortage of volunteers.
People aren't being recruited into the Gardaí, and I think we're going to have to look at other options as well, maybe raising the retirement age. People say the fitness test is too hard. People say we're not attracting people.
They also say they can't afford to live. They can't afford to rent.
Salaries as well certainly are an issue. But in terms of it's a good job. It was always a very attractive job, and it's just surprising that not enough people are being recruited into the guard.
Part of the attractiveness, you can retire very early and then go on to another career.
But equally, I think there are a lot of guards that would like to stay on that don't get to because they have to retire.
And they've taken legal cases on that.
So, wardens in Dublin North inner city to police O'Connell Street, they can observe and report but not enforce anything at all. Louise, you're grimacing.
Well, I don't know that that's how I describe my facial expression, Pat, but all right.
You're being streamed.
I understand. I will watch it back now and decide. No, I'm just not convinced by that. I'm not sure that it's... I know that nobody's suggesting it's a replacement for an Garda Síochána, but I really would like to see the focus on resourcing the Gardaí and ensuring that they are going to be there. I'm not really convinced by this idea. I'm not certain how it would work.
I'm just thinking of the lads I would have come across, and the warden comes up and he's observing and maybe reporting into his walkie-talkie and you know, the lad looks at him and says, what are you looking at?
I can't see,
do you go from there?
Yeah, but I mean, if we are going to look at, you know, innovation, I'd like to see a real focus on a dedicated transport unit within An Garda Síochána. And I know that Jim and some of his colleagues in Fianna Fáil had been talking about this, but it wasn't in the budget. There wasn't a shilling in the budget for it, so you'd wonder how serious
we'd like to see that. We put it forward as a proposal. But in terms of wardens in the inner city, I was down this week with a man who's just opened a business near O'Connell Street. I won't say where it is. his business has been enormously affected because people are directly outside his front door dealing in drugs, and it's a business that
requires... How is that acceptable?
I don't know. And in fairness, he's been in touch.
He's
been in touch with the Gardaí. The Gardaí have come. The guys move on. And they come back again. Like, I don't think wardens are going to solve that problem. No. If Gardaí can't solve that problem,
no, but I'm just wondering, if there's drug dealing,
a more available presence of Gardaí will solve that problem.
This is a very suspect proposal, I think. I mean, we don't know much about it. I was on another program earlier in the week where a government representative didn't seem to know anything about it, and had tried to get information from the Department of Justice and hadn't been able to find out much about it. You know, where's the money coming from for this? What are they doing exactly that we wouldn't expect good members of the public to do? Report and observe. If you see crime on the street path, do you report and observe it? Or do you observe and report it? Yeah, so would I. So I think that, like, that is what we expect of good citizens, and we shouldn't be paying people. And what kind of people are going to go for these jobs?
But like, the only thing is, if I'm going to report, I'm dialing 999 and then I'm being passed from Billy to Jack, and eventually, if these guys have a hotline, and they say, drug dealing at the GPO or at the doorway to so-and-so shop right now, if they have a hotline.
But business owners would love a hotline as well, because they will often tell you, you ring the guards, you tell them, there are two lads outside, one of them's handing the other one drugs, the other lad's handing them money, there is a drug deal actively going on outside. Now, the guards are stretched, so they may not be able to get there. And, you know, having a hotline is all very well, but you need to have more Gardaí so that somebody is going to be there to respond.
I just don't see the point of them.
Well, we've just got to be careful we don't lose the inner city as well, because the level of load-dealing, drug-dealing going on in the city is worrying. Yeah. And it's having an impact on people coming into the city centre. It's damaging businesses. And we need to get a grip of it, because if we lose control of that, parts of the city will just become areas that people won't
go to. One of the other themes this week has been obviously the ongoing refugee crisis, with the various reports from the SRI and from the advisory group and so on. And then you have protests outside a premises owned by the ESB and East Wall and so on. Louise, what are we to make of this? Because they're blaming people on the extreme right and the extreme left for kind of using the opportunity.
Nobody's blaming the left for this, Pat.
That's what they said in the reporting.
I will tell you, this is people on the far right who are seeking to store up division and hate within a community they were bussed in, is my understanding. But what has happened in advance of... So, you know, the people in East Wall know very clearly that the government and government agencies had really solid information about a big change that was going to happen in their community and didn't communicate it to them. OK, so that's very frustrating. So what they expect and what they want from government is some advance notice and some communication. They understand, I mean, you know, we all live in the real world. They understand nobody has a veto, nobody's seeking a veto. But what they do want is, notice and some communication. But they also want to see resources come. So if you're living in an area where you have to wait 2 weeks to get a GP appointment, where you can't get an appointment with a dentist, where your kids are on a waiting list for school, where you're on a waiting list for medical treatment, you need to see resources come in to match with additional population.
This was one of the promises kind of implicit in Catherine Day's report, that if you do accept refugees and asylum seekers in your community, you should get the resources, the extra teachers, the GPs and so on. But of course, it's not going to be huge.
Well, in reality, in an emergency situation where we've had a huge increase in the numbers of asylum seekers, and then we have the Ukraine refugee crisis on top of that, you know, you're not going to be able to provide the resources to a community, I think, as quickly as the people are arriving into these communities. But certainly it seems as if the government, or the Department of Equality, rather, Roderick O'Gorman, the minister, that there was a problem here whereby they didn't communicate this with the community. And that, you know, that's acknowledged, I think, this week by the fact that there's an extensive leaflet drop going on in the community to tell them what's happening. I mean, I think one thing that does expose is that one government department that is sort of newly established and is taking different bits of other government departments since it was established in 2020, has been given almost sole responsibility for one of the biggest crises
the
state has ever faced in terms of the influx of refugees fleeing a terrible war in Ukraine. And other government departments have to step up here, I think.
Yeah,
and
it's a cross departmental effort that's needed, really.
I think we need to be able to have an honest and open discussion about this. Like, what's happened in the state this year is extraordinary, and we've taken in 77,000 refugees to date, which is a remarkable achievement. And I think the generosity of the Irish people has been phenomenal in terms of that number coming in. It's obviously going to give rise to enormous challenges. Like when you look back at 2019, there was 4,700 people who came in seeking international protection. Like with Ukrainians this year, we're going to get up to around 85,000. Huge pressures are on the state in terms of trying to provide accommodation. I suspect there probably are people who are trying to stoke up division. People are on the right. But in fairness, to date, people have done well and people have displayed great generosity. And we just need to ensure that we preserve that. But listen, the idea that this is going to be easy for the state or Roderick O'Gorman or for the government just to provide accommodation at the drop of a hat, it's not easy.
I mean, 1.5% really added to our population
Nobody imagined it was going to be easy, but communication is easy. So when they knew they were going into the SB building for a month or more, that should have been communicated. And I think I think there's recognition, to be fair, from government that they didn't do well on this, but that maybe they have a plan.
It's going
to be
very hard to magic up high quality accommodation for all of the refugees and asylum seekers. There may be innovative solutions. Given that it's hopefully temporary accommodation for most people, it doesn't have to be, you know, all bells and whistles, but it has to be sound and warm. And
it's got to be warm, and it's got to be accessible, and they have to have access to public transport, because as well, you can't leave people stranded. But then you do have to keep coming back to the issue around school places and additional resources and healthcare, etc.
This brings us to the Taoiseach giving out about the NIMBYs. Jim.
NIMBYs exist in every society. I think what he was talking about was the difficulty we have in this country about housing. And he's perfectly entitled to say that before somebody raises an objection to a housing development going on in the neighbouring field or the neighbourhood, they need to reflect upon the fact that we have a housing crisis in this country and we've got to provide housing for young people. So I think what the message the Taoiseach was communicating was a perfectly valid message. And it's something I think that's been taken on board by very many politicians on the government side. Like, I'd be very slow to object to a housing development in my area, I have to say. I've done it once or twice in the past, but I'd be very slow about doing it now. There'd want to be something significantly wrong with it in order to object.
Yeah, I think the issue around, there's enough planning permissions in place at the moment to effectively make a massive contribution to resolving the housing.
Yeah, but they're not building them, are they?
Well, that's the point. But the planning permissions exist. So the building needs to be started. And I don't think that people object for absolutely no reason. I think when you see large-scale developments going in, but you don't see resources coming to follow that, people see already they can't get their kids into a school, they can't get an appointment in a dentist. So they want to see resources come with it. And again, it comes down to an issue of communication with communities. And I think that needs to be done a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's expanding on a theme that he's been hitting hard on the last year or so, and he's been hammering Louise's party for objecting to various developments across the country.
No, but that's been fact-checked. Well,
Louise, it's not in doubt that he's been hammering you on it. Whether it's true or not, that's what he's chosen to do. It's a political attack. And he is expanding that out now, I think, to homeowners. And I think that's interesting. And I think that, you know, he has a point in terms of this is an emergency. It is a crisis. We need housing in this country for people, and people who own homes should consider that when they're objecting, I guess.
All right. We will park it there. But thanks very much to Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal. My thanks to Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Bay South, and to Hugh O'Connell, Deputy the Political Editor with Independent Newspapers.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.